So welcome back, everyone. And if you can, it's nice to see people's images. If you are okay putting your video on, I like to see people as I speak and interact. If there is a bandwidth issue, of course, you can keep your video off. So I want today to continue to explore the theme that I started on January 6th on practicing with intentions. And when I set the schedule last year for the dates that I'd be teaching in January, I knew the dates January 6th and January 20th had some significance. And I was also aware that it could be a little bit unusual. We met last time that I was here on January 6th, and we actually didn't know what was happening, but of course, halfway through our session was what has variously been called a riot, a coup attempt, an insurrection that most of us found out about immediately after we finished here. For how many people was that the case? You soon found out, yeah. Soon found out about what was going on. And of course, it's shaken many of us. You know, I was actually very powerful and healing for I and several of my colleagues to teach a retreat on metta practice starting 4 days after that. We went on for 6 days, and we brought the awareness of the events as well as the background of other crises into our retreat, and I think it was very powerful and healing and transformative, and our practice has that potential. And so, what I want to do this time is actually review briefly where we were with intentions last time, and then continue to look at the importance of practicing with intentions. Last time we looked at it, especially in the context of individual formal practice and what we might call individual daily life. And today I want to extend that and bring the practice of intentions also into our larger relationship to our communities, to our society, and to our world. So look at that notion, really, of connecting our inner practices with our response more on a community level, a social level, a collective level. That's what I want to explore. So first, a little bit of review. Last time, and the recording of last time is on the website Dharma Seed under my name. Last time we looked fairly extensively at the understanding of intentions, both in terms of the teachings of the Buddha and in terms of how we might practice today in our daily lives, in our formal practice. And we particularly focused on two aspects of intention. What I called first, the connecting with deeper intentions, what we could call aspiration. And secondly, the work with intentions moment to moment in our lives. And ultimately, we want to connect those two. Connect the touching into deeper motivation, deeper intentions, and connect that with what can occur moment to moment. So we saw how central intention is in our practice. Intention really is our guide. It's something we continually come back to. It really is our way of awakening. It's our way of having our lives be transformative. I think this is a paraphrase from something I remember from the Tibetan tradition, where it says that all practice rides on intention. All of our practice rides on intention. And we want with our folk, with the first kind of intention, which I would call aspiration or deeper motivation, we want to be able to connect with this. And I mentioned that there are several terms and understandings in Buddhist tradition. One is chanda, which is some could be called wholesome or skillful desire. And I mentioned last time of how sort of in translation, desire kind of gets a bad rap. That there are a lot of things that we do which we could call desire. I desire to awaken. I desire to be a good person. And some of it's in the language. But there's a very crucial role for skillful intentions that are about something that we want. I want justice. I want reconciliation. I want connection. I want awareness. These are distinguished from what is problematic, which is a kind of wanting which is more compulsive, more connected with our unconscious habits. That's the kind of wanting which is problematic, which is to be seen through and transformed. But there's also a kind of wanting which is very skillful, and we don't get very far without it. So that's connected to this first kind of intention, and there are different ways to connect with that quality of aspiration. You know, many of us might begin our sittings by remembering our deeper intentions, why we practice. You know, I often guide us in that way at beginnings of sessions on Wednesdays. Didn't do it today. A little distracted by the inauguration, maybe. I don't know. But I typically do that. And so we can come back to our deeper intentions. And as I often say, connecting with our deeper intentions doesn't guarantee that the next moment we'll be following those deeper intentions, but it helps, right? And so that's a crucial point, because I can say, oh, may I be at this meeting and come from a kind heart, and then 5 seconds later I'm being snippy or unfriendly, right? So that happens, but the intention really, really helps, and it's a way of coming back, and we can connect with those deeper intentions in various ways. We can do it before a particular activity, a meeting, a challenging conversation perhaps, time with family, time with friends, whatever. And we can do it in multiple times during the day. You know, I mentioned last time that I have what I call a kind of a vow, which I do 4 times a day, which connects me with my deeper intentions. I also mentioned that it's particularly useful for me to go there if I get caught in something, you know, or if I wake up very, very distressed, which occasionally happens, like in the middle of the night, you know, and I get a little bit lost in worry or anxiety, then connecting with my 4 times a day vow. First of all, it takes some concentration to repeat it. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes. And then it both settles the mind, and it almost invariably shifts consciousness. So we can use it in that way. It can really help. Another tool that's very useful is simply to pause. Pause, and often if we're a little bit caught or disturbed, simply pausing will help us to come back to what our deeper intention is. You know, other ways of coming back to the deeper intention would be to do retreats, would be to sometimes do a Sabbath day where you do a little more practice, and that can often help. Setting priorities. One interesting practice that really is about setting priorities is that I like is always knowing when your next retreat is, if you do retreats. Simply knowing that, it's like a setting of priorities, and it's a way of really acting out of your deeper intentions. And then secondly, there's also, in a related way, having the moment-to-moment intentions. And this is where we try to develop skillful patterns or skillful habits. I mentioned last time how the Buddha explains the core of the meaning of karma in terms of intention, in terms of moment-to-moment intention. Essentially, he said that every moment their intentions that are determining how we act. A lot of those are unconscious or semi-conscious or automatic. And I think I'm going to come back maybe in March and give a whole focus on how we can notice these unconscious intentions, these habits. There are a lot of them that function beneath the level of consciousness. And some of them are quite hard to find. I mean, we've explored some of them, and often in our Wednesdays. But I think I'll come back to that. But moment to moment, we can notice. We can kind of tune in and notice our intentions. Maybe over time, we want to get beneath the level. Or how should I say, we want to get beneath things to see what's more unconscious or automatic. And there's often a lot that is that way. You know, when you find yourself acting, maybe out of wanting to create a certain self-image or impress someone, some of that is at an automatic level. And so a lot of other things we can point to. So moment to moment, it's really important to tune in. What is my intention that's guiding me now? And we can sometimes, again, pausing is really, really helpful. What's my intention in this conversation? What's going on? Is it skillful or unskillful? This is a way that we connect our deeper aspiration to moment-to-moment experience. That's what we're looking for. You know, we want to, coming back to the intention to be present, where I think of Julia Butterfly Hill has that intention, may every action come out of love. You know, and there are many, many ways that we can see that. And so we can just ask ourselves, these are some ways to manifest the moment-to-moment intention. Just ask, what's wise in this moment? Keep coming back to that. Have a clear intention. Bring back one's larger or deeper intention or vow. Sometimes another very skillful intention is to say, this is happening in my mind and heart and body right now. What's a skillful practice? Should I do mindfulness? Am I feeling a little bit down and distressed? Maybe compassion practice. Maybe a heart practice is more valuable. So that question, what's a skillful practice right now? Mindfulness is not always the best thing to do. Sometimes loving kindness or compassion is valuable. Sometimes it's valuable to actually, when things are too difficult, they're not workable, somehow to do that, whatever brings us back to balance. So another skillful question to ask in terms of intention is, what's the level of difficulty right now? Okay. So that's a kind of review, and this is really these practices with intention in terms of aspiration, deeper motivation on the one hand, and making it work moment to moment are really what take us through the day, and so really can be very crucial to continue. So I want to also link now that emphasis on intention to our intention, we might say, for being in a community, for being in society, for being in the world. What are our skillful intentions in this way? And again, we do so knowing very well, you know, the multiple crises of our time. You know, and I watched the inauguration this morning in the, where I am, at least, And I was appreciative that the president-elect, President Biden, mentioned the major crises, all of them, and said, I think, one of them would be plenty, and we have, five or six. We have the pandemic and the economic crisis. We have the, still, I think, crisis of democracy. This is in the U.S. We have, the wanting to reverse what's sometimes called systemic racism, or the residues of unresolved, untransformed residues of the last 400 years. And we have, of course, the climate emergency. And so, a starting point for really bringing our intentions to these crises is seeing that there's a relationship between the inner states of people and the crises, or another way of saying it, between our inner states and what's happening more outwardly. I like to quote Shantideva, who wrote A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life in the 8th century. He said, "This world is disturbed with insanity due to the exertions of those who are confused about themselves." Can you see that in the world? People who are confused about themselves, and I would say about reality, creating a lot of problems. And another way that we can sometimes talk about it is saying that the world is consumed with greed, hatred, and delusion. The core of our practice is transforming greed, hatred, and delusion. Can we see the greed? Not very hard to see these days, the greed for power, the greed for wealth. We can see the various forms of hatred in sort of the divide and conquer manipulation of racism, or different kinds of scapegoating, different ways of creating others, to who do not really belong. We can see that level of hatred, often deeply, deeply manipulated. It's like, I think there is a song, people have to learn to hate. Children do not grow up that way, right? They have to be learned, and I think in many, if not most cases, manipulated by those in power to have this internal tendency towards hatred. And then, of course, delusion. We see delusion very widespread. So our inner practices are crucial because we're working on transforming that which leads outwardly to these problems, these issues, these crises. And they can sometimes feel overwhelming. I think that another one of the connections between inner and outer is that our inner practices are deeply, deeply valuable for helping us be responsive to the outer problems. That the resources of mindfulness, of compassion, of equanimity, of balance, of knowing how to be skillful with difficult emotions, difficult states, difficult narratives, difficult thoughts. These are invaluable for anyone wanting to respond to the needs of the world. And I think they actually are defining, we might say, what I think is a whole new emerging toolkit for those who are active in the world. Sometimes we call them activists, or just people who are participating. And yet it's very challenging. There's some amazing questions that were asked in the 1950s by the great African American writer, sociologist, activist W.E.B. Du Bois, who was a co-founder in 1909 of the NAACP. And when he was in his 80s, actually in his late 80s, he wanted to make connections with some of the younger generation. And he connected with a lot of people at that time. This was the 1950s. And he wrote, starting, I think, at the age of 87, he wrote three novels. Can you imagine that? Age of 87, he wrote three novels. And one of the novels, the first volume, was particularly centered on what he said, that for many, many years, I've been wrestling with four questions. He said every generation has to come to grips with these questions. And I think these are both challenges, but they also show how valuable this connection of inner and outer is. He said the four questions are, how does integrity face oppression? Number one. You can just ask how you would work with these. Number two, what does honesty do in the face of deception? Number three, what does decency do in the face of insult? And number four, how does virtue meet brute force? Powerful challenges. And so again, they can bring up sometimes, gosh, this is a lot. And it is a lot. But we have these incredible resources, inner resources, and we also have the power of community and connection. And it's clear that what the world is calling for right now is for many, many of us to respond using our own gifts. And very important is that the need is not for all of us to do the same thing or be on the front lines. One guide that's been really important for me is the understanding that I got from Joanna Macy, one of our great beings who's still going strong at the age of 91, still teaching at the age of 91. And she says that the transformation to a sustainable, just world has to occur in three areas. And as I say these, listen for the one that you're most drawn to, because I think each of us has gifts valuable for one of these. The first is holding actions to prevent further damage. That would be the area that we usually would call activism. Or it could be, you know, could be at being active in your community on a more national or global level, but it's somehow preventing further bad things from happening or stopping bad things. Secondly, we want to understand and transform our core institutions. So this would be people maybe who are trying to develop new modes of agriculture or education or parenting or economics or community development or whatever, as well as some of the larger institutions. And so many of us might be drawn there to develop new forms of training. And thirdly, transforming consciousness. And so this could be people who do yoga, who teach yoga, and who teach people different relationships to their body. Could be people who teach meditation. What I find the key is, see where you're called, especially in terms of those three areas, and then keep making the connection between those three areas. That's really crucial. When I've worked with this model with people who are interested, who come to retreats, for example, on socially engaged practice, people have tremendous relief. What it means is you don't have to do everything, and you don't even have to be on the front lines. Just find where you're called, find what calls you. Very, very crucial. And so I want to say a little bit more about this with two reference points, and then we'll do some writing together. Oh, I forgot to tell you, if you can, please have a piece of paper and a writing implement. We'll use it in about 15 minutes. And so if you need to just walk away for a few moments, could be something electronic, but just a piece of paper and a writing implement of some kind. You know, I'll ask everyone to have that. Sorry I didn't ask that earlier. So I'm going to work with two reference points, and then we'll do a short writing exercise, very much like we did 2 weeks ago. And the two reference points are the Buddhist figure of the Bodhisattva, and then some on the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose birthday was celebrated just 2 days ago. And I have an image of him, some of you can see behind me. So those are my two reference points for helping us to, in this session, respond more skillfully to the needs of our time and find what calls us. So first, the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva is a figure in the Buddhist tradition that, I should say maybe who, brings together awakening with helping others. And very, very inspiring being, many people's practice, you know, both in traditionally in Asia and also I think for many people in the West, many people find tremendous inspiration from relating to these bodhisattvas. These are almost like archetypal beings who bring together helping others with individual awakening. I would say bring together the inside and the outside. And let me introduce three. And Brian, let's introduce first Kuan Yin. Many of you know Kuan Yin is one of the bodhisattvas. Let's bring the image of Kuan Yin. This is Kuan Yin that some of you know. I think this is from the Atkins Museum in Kansas City. Kuan Yin is the bodhisattva of compassion and is actually a transgender bodhisattva, is male in India and female in China, and has the quality of deep compassion. Her name means she who hears the cries of the world. And this may inspire us. You know, I actually, 4 times a day in my vow, as part of it, I invoke Kuan Yin and bring the energy of Kuan Yin into my being. It's one of the ways we can work with a bodhisattva. Another bodhisattva, let's do Manjushri, is the bodhisattva of wisdom. This is a Tibetan image of Manjushri, and the sword is called the sword of discriminating wisdom that cuts through delusion. And this may be inspiring to you. I have an image of Manjushri right near my desk where I work on Dharma talks. So hopefully Manjushri is with me in this talk. You know, and then thirdly, this is Samanta Bhadra, also known in the Bon Tibetan tradition as Kunta Zampo. And this is the deep embodiment of primordial awakening and is more a guide for deep meditation practice. So these are some of the bodhisattvas who mean the most to me personally, and there are quite a number of other ones. And so the bodhisattva can be an inspiration for one's practice. And in fact, traditionally, there can be a vow that we take to be a bodhisattva, to bring together this inner awakening and outer helping of others. And there are many texts, which some of you know, which embody this vow. The bodhisattva makes a vow, and this may be something we want to do, makes a vow to have one's life guided by both inner awakening and helping others. This is from the Theravada tradition, from the 5th century. Crossed, I would cross others. Freed, I would free others. Tamed, I would tame others. Calmed, I would calm others. Comforted, I would comfort others. Attained to Nibbana, I would lead others to Nibbana. Purified, I would purify others. Enlightened, I would enlighten others. Oh, may I awaken to supreme perfect enlightenment and bring well-being and happiness to all beings. This could be a vow which one says every day, or can make it into your own version. This can be very, very helpful. Some of you may have practiced in the Zen tradition. This is a well-known vow from the Zen tradition, which you may know from practicing Zen. Living beings are infinite. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. And just a few passages also giving this sense almost like of a vow. This is from that text I mentioned earlier, Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life from the 8th century, which is a beautiful text. You can buy it. There's some very good translations. Can get it, probably get it online. This is from the actual text, a few of the lines. May I be a guard for those who are protectorless, a guide for those who journey on the road, for those who wish to go across the water. May I be a boat, a raft, a bridge. May I be an isle for those who yearn for landfall, a lamp for those who long for light, for those who need a resting place, a bed. For all those who need someone to help, may I be there to help. Like the great earth and the other elements, enduring as the sky itself endures, for the boundless multitude of living beings, may I be the ground and vessel of their life. And it goes on like that. So the Bodhisattva has this ability to touch inner freedom and also to help others. That's what can be our aspiration. And so I wanted to then go right now to the figure of Dr. King. And I think Dr. King is, I would say, the example of a 20th century Bodhisattva. And I think it's really, really crucial to have in mind beings like that who seem to combine, you know, in even being imperfect, combine these deep qualities. For Dr. King, it was the quality of love and compassion, empathy, kindness, with this ability to act. And, you know, I've been inspired personally by Dr. King for a long time, probably from the 1960s when I was young. I think I've mentioned sometimes that my parents were near the front of the line in the 1963 march on Washington, where he gave the "I Have a Dream" speech. I think I heard they were 10 feet away, you know. And I was young. They asked me if I wanted to go, and I said I think I'd rather play. So, missed my opportunity, but oh well. Still, it's been someone I've deeply learned from, and they're very beautiful, deep connections, I think, between Buddhist practice and the work of Dr. King. That's been really important for me for a long time, that there is a way that really metta, kindness, love are at the center, right? Imagine social action guided by love. That's the explicit intention. And this is why nonviolence is so important. I believe that nonviolence is going to make a comeback because it's so powerful and very, very central to Buddhist practice, both in terms of ethics, but also in terms of the understanding that, I think the understanding that harm comes out of greed, hatred, and delusion, that violence comes out of violence, and that the imperative is to stop the cycle of harm, stop the cycle of violence, stop the cycle in Buddhist language of reactivity. And that's right at the center of our practice. It's really, we would say, dukkha produces dukkha. Hurt people hurt people. And what that means is that I don't know who said it, but man is not the enemy, right? Human beings are not the enemy. So you can go back and hear from Dr. King, there's a tremendous empathy that he felt for, particularly for poor whites. You know, that he went out of his way often to talk with them, and he could see how they were so manipulated. You know, and that actually they were not better off. I think we could say the same is true for the people just recently who've been so manipulated. They are not better off. They are not better off, but they maybe gain something from what actually W.E.B. Du Bois called the wages of whiteness. They actually don't have better wages, but they get some sort of pseudo wages where they think they're better, right? And anyway, Dr. King's approach was empathy and understanding. And so very, very powerful approach that I think we find in multiple settings. You can see elements like this from Standing Rock. You know, you can find it in some of the native elders. And very, very powerful. And so I think I could say a lot more, and I've done, and some of you know, I've done three-day retreats, bringing together, typically, I think I did it with my colleague Kazuhaga. We did three-day retreats, showing the connections between Buddhist practice and the life and work of Dr. King. But I think at this point, what I'd like to do is actually to just play some from a recording of Dr. King, from him reading his letter from a Birmingham jail, which I believe was 1963. So we'll do that right now.
City jail. I came across your recent statement calling my present activities unwise and untimely.
Is it coming through okay, Brian?
I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill.
You need to click share screen.
And that your criticisms are sincerely set forth.
All right, that's good. You can start it over.
I want to answer your statement and what I hope will be patient and reasonable. While confined here in the Birmingham City Jail, I came across your recent statement calling my present activities unwise and untimely. Since I feel that you are men of genuine goodwill and that your criticisms are sincerely set forth, I want to try to answer your statement in what I hope will be patient in reasonable terms. You deplore the demonstrations taking place in Birmingham, but your statement, I am sorry to say, fails to express a similar concern for the conditions that brought about the demonstrations. Birmingham is probably the most thoroughly segregated city in the United States. Its ugly record of brutality is widely known. There have been more unsolved bombings of Negro homes and churches in Birmingham than in any other city in the nation. These are the hard, brutal facts of the case. You may well ask, why direct action? Why sit-ins, marches, and so forth? Isn't negotiation a better path? Nonviolent direct action seeks to create such a crisis and foster such a tension that a community which has constantly refused to negotiate is forced to confront the issue. You speak of our activity in Birmingham as extreme. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love of your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? When you have seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse, kick, and even kill your black brothers and sisters, when you see the vast majority of your 20 million Negro brothers smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park and see her developing an unconscious bitterness toward white people, when you have to concoct an answer for a five-year-old son who is asking, "Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean?" When you are humiliated day in and day out by nagging signs reading white and colored, when your first name becomes nigger, your middle name becomes boy, however old you are, and your last name becomes John, and your wife and mother are never given the respected title Mrs., when you are harried by day and haunted by night by the fact that you are Negro, living constantly at tiptoe stands, never quite knowing what to expect next, and are plagued with inner fears and outer resentments, when you are forever fighting a degrading and degenerating sense of nobodiness, then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. You assert that our actions, even though peaceful, must be condemned because they precipitate violence. Isn't this like condemning Jesus because his unique God consciousness and never-ceasing devotion to God's will precipitated the evil act of crucifixion? I have no despair about the future. I have no fear about the outcome of our struggle in Birmingham, even if our motives are at present misunderstood. We will reach the goal of freedom in Birmingham and all over the nation, because the goal of America is freedom. We will win our freedom because the sacred heritage of our nation and the eternal will of the Almighty God are embodied in our echoing demands.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. King. And bring out your paper now, or your writing implement. Could be electronic again. I'd like to just take a little bit of time now. See if you are called to have something like a vow, a set of intentions that you have in relationship to how you want to respond in the next period of time to the needs of the world. Last time we focused more on some of our own individual intentions. See what calls you in terms, and this is just for yourself for right now. It could take the form of a vow, it could be one sentence, it could be a little bit longer. It could be, think of maybe the inspiration of the Bodhisattva, the inspiration from Dr. King. What calls you right now in terms of your own personal intention to respond to the needs of our, you know, of your community, of our society, our world. And again, many of us are in different societies, actually, so whatever is appropriate. Just take now maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes just to have some free writing. See what calls you in terms of something like a set of intentions or a vow. So take about another minute or so. And now if what you've written, some of you may have just been reflection, if it's in the form of a set of intentions or vows, look it over now and silently take the vow or take the intentions for yourself. Do that right now. See what you've written and silently take this as a vow or as a set of intentions. And now let us, if you wish, bow to each other. Bow to each other who have all, I think, developed their own sense of a strong intention. How many people were surprised by what came through? Yeah. So we can bow to each other and appreciate each other, and may these vows keep guiding us. And I'd like to invite, would anyone be willing to share the vow? I'd love to hear from a few people. Anyone be willing to share what you wrote? Can you use either the raised hand function or looks like Victoria, I can see your hand up. And you can, yeah. When we let Victoria speak.
May I meet all beings with compassion and empathy. May I seek to heal the despair and desperation of all beings whom I encounter. May I always be ready to listen and slow to speak. May I always seek to understand the feelings and needs of others. May I be willing to serve others, even at my own expense. May I always speak the truth and affirm the truth.
Yeah. Thank you. Brian, do we have another person who'd like to share?
I don't see any hands raised, and there's nothing in the chat.
Okay. Okay, I can see probably a lot of our people. If you want to, you can either use the raise hand function or just raise your actual hand if you'd like to. And you don't have to read the whole thing. If you want to read part of it, that's fine. Anyone else? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ed.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. My intentions. Intention to speak the truth to people and about people. To let my yes be a yes and my no be a no. Engage in helping others in need in ways that I can. Look at myself. Then look wider.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, maybe one or two other people. Anyone willing to? I know it's can be very personal and intimate in a way. Anyone willing? You can just share a part of it if you wish. Please, thank you. Lucy, please.
I will act out of kindness and compassion to reduce harm in the world, to enhance the well-being of marginalized people and animals, to reduce the suffering of all beings.
Great, thank you. Thank you so much. And maybe I could ask you if you if you're willing, if you'd like to put a line or two from what you wrote into the chat, that could also work. And that could be shared without you reading it, maybe. And Brian, are there some coming through?
Not yet.
Okay.
I can verbally share one.
Great, thank you. Thanks,
no
Michael.
Problem. So the vow is to support my local community and in any way I can, both financially and through volunteering time, to aid in the relief of all those suffering currently in this pandemic, social unrest, and environmental global threats. I will do my part in the form of nonviolent participation for my community.
Thank you so much.
All right, do you want to invite Michael to speak?
Yes, please. Yeah.
Hello. May I be an agent for healing from the suffering of trauma and addiction? May my personal healing be through the intention of breaking the cycle of suffering, if only for one other being. May it be for the whole world, for all beings everywhere. May I be made wise and wise in action to cause no further suffering. May I freely share the gift of freedom I have received.
Well, yeah, thank you so much. Can ring a bell for everyone. I wrote something also. I think I'd like to offer what I wrote, okay? So I think I can feel what many are feeling. Oh, do I want to do this? I don't know. So I can relate. So here it is. I vow to bring my own gifts to the needs of our times, to let go of what gets in the way, busyness, distractions. I will write, I will teach on what is important, I will help illuminate the path of the contemporary Bodhisattva. I will continue my parents, Simon and Bernice's legacy. Now is the time. I will keep this vow close and recite it 4 times a day. Thank you. I'll ring a bell for myself. Okay. Anyone else want to get in? I didn't tell you that saying your intentions publicly makes them stronger. Okay, it's a secret. Okay, please, Kathy. You have to unmute, Kathy, I think.
The last few weeks, I've actually been doing this with the Bodhisattva vow.
Wow.
And tying it in with the 6 perfections and the immeasurables,
yeah,
which is the language that I use in my practice. May I embody the beauty and the blossoming of the 6 perfections and 4 immeasurables in my everyday life.
Thank you. I've done a whole gathering where we meet for a day and study the Bodhisattva, and we have a ceremony, you know, in person. And after each person comes up, we say collectively, you know, thank you for your vow, Bodhisattva. Please go forth, something like that. So I think I will say that to all of us, whatever our expression is. So anyone else further inspired, please, Rich. Yeah.
May I hold space for healing?
the expansion of consciousness, and the growth of sustainable communities. Mm. Through coaching, teaching, group facilitation, emotional counseling, and my meditation practice, may this foster the peaceful and harmonious coexistence of all life, a sustainable and regenerative human presence, such that all the resources, beings, and ecosystems of the earth can be held as sacred and precious, and thereby thrive in healthy balance and vibrancy.
Thank you. So last call, it'll be time for one more if anyone wanted to join and be part of this in sharing. Okay, so we'll finish with the dedication of merit, which is also an intention practice. It's really what we often do at the end of a practice session, where we remember that we practice very much for ourselves, but also for others. And so may the benefits of our time together be there for us, be there for all those in our own circles, but may they also be extended beyond ourselves, beyond our own circles, to other beings, ultimately to all beings. May our morning together be of benefit to all beings, knowing that we are part of all beings. And may these intentions, both spoken and those more just spoken to ourselves, may they gain power by having been expressed in a community of practitioners. And may these intentions be guides for us as we bring our good hearts and our wisdom and our skillful action to ourselves, to our families, to our communities, to our world. So thank you, everyone, and thanks for being part of this. And expressing some of our deeper intentions, and thanks to those who spoke, but thanks to everyone who just, and may our intentions and vows bear fruit and be contributions to the deep needs at our time of our world, of our earth. Thank you, everyone. Okay, so till next time.
I'm going to invite if you would like to unmute and say goodbye.
Yeah, you can unmute everyone if you want to say goodbye or.
Thank you so much.
Good retreat.
Thank you for that. Yeah. And see you. See everyone in March.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.